Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the 2018 Home Education Conference, held in Logan, Utah.
All right, so I started homeschooling when my oldest was in third grade. He was about to start third grade, and everyone asked me, they probably asked you this, what are you gonna do when your kid gets to high school? What about the socialization? What about the subjects that are too hard? You know, how are you gonna teach it? What are you gonna do? And I just said, there's no way I'm gonna be homeschooling my kid in high school, so this is a non-issue. And that's my son, and he just finished his sophomore year. Here he is at our co-op, and I'm still homeschooling him. Despite what I thought, that I would never be homeschooling a high schooler. And my co-op is kind of the reason why I think I was able to solve all those problems. This is him and his band. He's in a rock band. He's over in Boise playing in a Boise Fry company. Everybody in his rock band is part of co-op. So that's who he refers to as his sister. That's not a sister. He's known her since the fourth grade. She's the bass, her little brother's the drums, another kid is like the backup guitar, they're all in our co-op. This is kind of things that normal high schoolers might do, right? Social, they hang out at each other's houses, they like, you know, do all the things kids do at high school, and it's all from the co-op. And then here we are in co-op, doing hard things. This is beyond my skill set, right there. I am not like a science genius. I enjoy science. I'm not a science genius. I'm not a high school level science genius. But there are people I know who are fabulous, who are taking that pressure off of me, right? And they're doing the things that I can't do. And this is what's allowed me to be able to be successful at homeschooling. So you may be thinking, that's great, but like my oldest is a first grader. Why would I need a co-op? These are some things that we have done this year in our co-op. This is Halloween party. This is my youngest son, is the lounging skeleton. We've had pajama Christmas party. We've had Dr. Seuss Day. We've had field day. Those are the high schoolers. We've had splatter painting day, stone soup with preschool. The National Guard came in and taught us how to properly do the pledge and fold a flag and all these things. I don't know about you, but I am not the kind of mom at home themselves who would pull out splatter paint or make stone soup, or invite the National Guard to my house, or invite all the friends to come over in costume, because I am not that kind of mom. But I wish I was that kind of mom, which is why I have co-op, which has given me like help. Like, it's given me an excuse to do my part, and other people have done their part, and all together we have worked as a community, and we've created this awesome like environment for our kids. So besides what I think of co-op, I have a mom who said at our co-op who said, years ago, this stopped being about my children. This started to be about me. She calls it, ours meets on Thursday, she calls it Therapy Thursday, because our co-op has become the things that you need to be, and if you're part of co-ops, you're probably like, oh yeah, we already know this. But if you're trying to figure it out, this is your team. This is your family. All those people become your extended family, your support system, your friends. These are your people, the people who get you when your family doesn't get why you're homeschooling and why all this stuff. This has been like my people. This is the people who've helped me be like, let's sit down, all of us high school moms. How are you doing this? What can we do? How can we do this? My kid's struggling with dyslexia. What are you doing? And this is what has helped me to be successful. So I think of this like church. So this is my analogy. Co-op is to church as calm is to mom. So think for a second about church. Say you have multiple kids and you show up, and maybe your job is to teach the 7-year-olds in primary. And while you're teaching the 7-year-olds in primary and you've prepped this awesome lesson that you're teaching your 7-year-olds, somebody is teaching your 15-year-old Sunday school and then teacher's quorum and your 12-year-old Sunday school and then beehives and your 10-year-old primary and your sunbeam primary and your nursery kid primary. And that's not even like counting the scouts and the activity days and all those things that happen on Wednesday. If you think for a second that if you tried to take that all on yourself, if you did not have church, if you said, okay, it's Sunday, so hold on, I'm going to teach the 15-year-old something, and then I'm going to teach you the 12-year-old, and then I'm going to teach the 10-year-old, and then I'm going to try to go to the 3-year-old, and somehow the nursery kid's going to learn about Jesus here, and we're going to make it all work, and then I'm also going to be your scout leader and your activity days leader, and we'll do some really fun things. Like, do you sense like the burnout? Like, you could not do it on your own, right? You couldn't do the same quality that you can do when it gets distributed by a lot of people. And you yourself might not even have a 7-year-old that you're teaching in primary, but you're putting in a lot of effort and doing a good job because you know somebody's teaching everybody else. Somebody has stepped up and become the Cub Scout leader and the activity days leader and girls camp and all this. And so together you work as a team and it's the best you can do for your kids, right? And so that gives you like the calmness. And that's the same thing the way that a co-op is. Somebody else is helping you do all the pieces, and so that you can be like, okay, I've got that. That's not my strength, but somebody's covered this and someone's covered this, and I can prep this one thing, and then overall, it's all going to be great. So much more has happened. Okay, so this was at our co-op just a few weeks ago. This is the other thing that I love about it. So this is the 4th grade art class, and the teacher there who's fabulous was teaching them about embroidery. Now mine is this 10-year-old here who's looking like, what are we doing? Let me tell you that if I was at home and I said, today we're gonna learn how to embroider, he would be like, heavens no, you know, like, where's the balls, where's the manly whatever, I am not doing this. But because someone who he loves and respects is like, in art class today we're going to learn how to do this, he totally did it and he had fun, which he would not have even admitted he would have had fun if I'd attempted this at home. He would have grumbled and complained. But someone who wasn't me stepped in and said, hey, we're all going to do this and this is going to be great. And he was so proud of it, he gave it to me for Mother's Day. You know, like, he would never have done that, right? On his own. So those are some of the, like, this is why you're gonna be like, yes, I wanna do this, I wanna have a co-op. And so, how do you start, okay? So if you have your booklet, I'm gonna kind of go through this note page a little bit and talk about some of the things. So the first thing is if you want social or academic, and that doesn't mean you're not gonna have both, right? Like, you're just gonna have an academic co-op and no one's going to socialize or you're not going to learn anything, but it's kind of what your emphasis is. So a social emphasis is more like, this is something that we're going to do for fun and it's going to fulfill that social need that your kids really, really do need. They want to be around other kids, they want to have fun, but we're going to do all of our own academics at home and this isn't really going to take the place of anything, if that makes sense. With an academic based, we're looking more at, hey, we're still gonna have fun and we're still gonna socialize, but this is going to take the place of some curriculum that I would normally teach you at home. So in my co-op, mine is an academic based co-op that I'm part of, and one of our things we teach is science. So because we teach science at co-op, I don't teach science at home. So our co-op's Thursday, we have a 1-day-a-week co-op. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, I'm not teaching any science whatsoever. Now for my junior high and high schooler, their science teacher, and I was my daughter, the 6th grade's junior high one, they have assigned work. Here is some reading I want you to do with your textbook. Here is some homework questions, here's blah, blah, blah. So they have assigned work that my kids are working on independently without me, besides maybe saying, hey, did you remember to do your science? I'm doing no teaching. And then the elementary school kids, they don't have homework. And I am like so okay to leave that. Here we go. I know we've got fabulous teachers at co-op. You're gonna learn science on Thursday. and we're done. I'm not doing science Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Friday. So for me, that has opened up a lot of time. So I did teach sixth grade earth science, and I did prep that, and that did take me time to prep it. But especially where I have a high school, a junior high, and an elementary, I cannot combine the way some people can combine when they've got a lot of littles close together. So the time that it would take me to teach a high schooler science and a middle schooler science and an elementary school kid science would be greater than the time it would take me to teach one class. And so that has taken the place of science for me. So if you're looking for something like, I want to lift something, and it doesn't have to be science, like we're gonna do history at co-op, we're gonna do whatever, so that I don't do it at home and that lessens my time, that's kind of like the academic. If you're like, I am really good with what I'm doing at home, this works, I've got a system, but I still want my kids to have fun and learn some other stuff. So that's kind of where you're like thinking what your focus is between the social and the academic kind of focus. So here are some ideas. So the social co-ops can go from anything like really basic to just a playgroup. If you've got little bitty ones and they just want to have some fun and they want to go to school, and so you just meet and play together and talk with moms, like that's so easy, right? It can be a field trip group. We're going to meet once a month for field trips, and we're going to take turns arranging a field trip, and we all meet together. There's a social thing where you've learned something, it's just extra. It could be, we're going to have an arts and crafts group. We're going to have a hiking nature study group. And those are still like academic things, but it's not taking the place of anything. It's extra. We're going to do a board game group. Whatever you want, those are some ideas of like a social one. When you have academic, you can do like what I said, where like that takes the place of something like your science at home or your history at home or whatever you want to do. Or it can be, this is a really fun academic thing I want my kids to do, but it's more like a supplement, like Lego robotics, or we're going to learn Spanish, or you know, something like that. That's awesome, but maybe not your skill set. Maybe you don't know Spanish or how to teach Lego robotics, but somebody else could, and it could supplement. So those are kind of some ideas. So really, before you start something, you just have to think, what is my focus of where do I want to go with this, you know, which is what we've heard over and over again in this conference, like, what is your vision? What am I looking for? What do I want? And then that helps you as you go through all the details, like, this is what I want. This is my vision. So now I'll make everything align with it. Okay, so the next part is how much work you want to put into it. And you really need to think about this seriously. Like, I mean, seriously consider, what is my calling? How many kids do I have? What age are they? Like, you want to set yourself up for success. So if you think, you really only have like an hour of time a week, but you want to do something that's going to take like 10 hours of time a week, you need to think about that. Like, give yourself an honest evaluation of, maybe I'm not ready to take on this taking over my science type co-op. Maybe all I can do is do like a field trip co-op once a month. The nice thing is, like everything in life, this can be fluid. So if this is your first year and you're like, you know what, I just think I'm gonna try doing a field trip once a month. And then maybe next year I'm gonna try this or this. You know, you always start easy, instead of just like jumping in and then getting overwhelmed and freaking out. So think about, if you think, you know what, I have enough time, I could prepare a class, I think I could do this, this is what I want, this is my vision. Consider that as you're considering like your vision of what you're looking for. Okay, how often do you want to meet? So obviously, the more times you meet a week, the more work it's gonna be. And not just work for you prepping, like the work of getting all your kids dressed together in the car, out the door, at the place, you know, and even like blocking your time off, like, if I do 3 days a week, then no music lessons that day, no dentist, you know, you're trying to figure it out. So think about that also realistically in your schedule, like block out your week. What do we do? Do we do music lessons on Mondays and sports class on Tuesdays? Like, what do I already have going on? How often can I realistically think? And then also think about what you're doing at home, like academics. If you have little people, leaving home more to do a couple days of co-op might be not as big of a deal as if you have like high school kids who are doing like college work and they need time to get their classes done. That might be too much. So you have to balance. You have to figure out, okay, I think I can handle it these many times. This works for me. Okay, and then the next thing, this is like the biggest thing. This is the biggest thing, is thinking about where you're going to meet. So depending on what you're doing, an easy way to start is like an outdoors thing. If you're going kind of low-key and this is your first year and you're starting, I was part of a PE co-op before I'm part of this academic one I did when my kids were a little littler, and we had like 1 month like was like soccer outside at this park, and then the next month was like tennis at this park, and then when it got cold we went indoors and did swimming at the Y, and then when it was spring again we were doing like track and field. We had different things, and going outdoors at a park was really easy. It didn't cost any money, it didn't mess up anybody's house. That was like an easy way to go. If you do like a field trip one, that's also easy because it's out in the community, it's not here. The big two things you have to think about is if you're meeting in people's houses or if you're going to rent space. So maybe for your first year, when you haven't got really a budget together and you're starting, you might want to meet in people's houses. This will obviously limit your size, which is okay when you're starting out. Things to consider if you have like four people's houses, are you rotating? So each house, you know, each week you go, if you meet once a week and each month week you're at a different house, or this person has a big house, so we're always gonna meet there. Well, think about that, especially if it's your house. Like, are you going to want to clean up again? Is there going to be the co-op help cleanup? Who's gonna pay for all that toilet paper? I mean, you have to think about some things. Like, if that's your house every week, are you really okay with it? And if you're like, oh, that person said they're okay with it, are they really okay with it? So if you're meeting at houses, think about, and it's not even yours, think about the hostess. Like, what can we do so everybody has cleaned up their house and not left it a mess? What kind of supplies would she be supplying? Things that you don't think about, like toilet paper and soap and like the glue sticks and all that, so that it does not become a burden, because if it becomes a burden on you or someone else, it's gonna die off. You want it to self-sustain. So this is like your years where you're formulating it, like the first years, so that now, like my co-op, we're in our 14th year, it just does its thing. Because we've sat down and we figured out things and we worked on it, and now it just does its thing. So really think about what will sustain it. You want things that self-sustain. And if it's all on one person, it's that person's gonna probably at some point be burnt out. So how can we figure that out? How can we make their life easier? How could we split the load? Those kind of things if you go with houses. And again, that's gonna limit, because how many people would you realistically want in your house? What are your spaces? You know, a kitchen table, a schoolroom, a garage. How many places can you put? Then it divides, like, are we breaking into one group, two, three? You have to think on that. The thing that we do, we rent out a church, and that's what we do with our space. That can be really tricky, and it depends on obviously where you live, how many options you have. The LDS church will not let you use it for co-op, so that's just like off the table. So then you have to find some place that will let you rent a space at a reasonable rate, which is really, really hard. However, and maybe I don't know where you're living, realize that there's a lot of non-denominational Christians that homeschool, right? And so some of them are very pro-homeschool, but some of them are very anti-LDS. So there's a balance there of finding somebody who will let people who are LDS and also non-LDS, but like into their building. So what I do is we've had to change our location. The one we were in forever decided that it would be a good idea to have Alcoholic Anonymous meetings at the same time as my co-op. And I was like, I feel like that's not going to work for us. And so we had to change location. So what I did is I wrote just a basic form letter, typed it up on my computer, like, we are going to have roughly these many kids. My co-op right now has like 130 kids. So that's already like limits where I can go. We have these many kids. We need these many classrooms. If you need a nursery space, we need a nursery space. If you need an outdoor space, we need an outdoor space, or a gym, we need a gym. Like, outline everything you need. I need a closet to put something or whatever, and then say, I am willing to pay this much money per month to rent it. And then I just started going down the list and emailing and emailing and emailing, and half the people just like didn't even respond. And some of them said no, but some of them are really, really nice. And we're like, oh, well, we can't do Thursdays, but could you do Wednesdays? Or, oh, my friend who's the pastor at this church might have space, or we already have a co-op on this day or that day. And just networking that was where we were able to find a location. Now, if you don't have a ton, depending on the size of your town, or if there's not a lot of, you know, like, you're gonna struggle. Like, just, you may be limited in size to homes if you can't find a location, if there's not a, you know, whatever. But a church is great because they have a lot of classroom spaces where you can individualize. And that might be something that you start in homes, and then as you grow, 2, 3, 4 years later, you start putting your feelers out till you find a space that will grow with you. Because I think maybe the first year, it's what, June now, June 1st, if you are like, we're gonna find a church and rent it out, that's gonna be maybe a struggle to get everything in place by like September. Maybe, I mean, it depends on your community. So you may wanna start with some homes this year with a plan, hey, I'm gonna spend the next 9 months like emailing, calling churches, finding a spot. What about this community center? What about Boys and Girls Club? Are they available? So you may put that on like, this is our goal, this is our long-term goal, and this is what we're gonna do for now. Because that will be by far the biggest struggle if you're looking for a big space. By far, that's been my biggest struggle. Okay, all right, who are we going to let in? So this is people, so it depends, lots of times. So my homeschool co-op that I'm part of, we have a nursery from newborn babies and we go through high school, so that no matter what stage you're in, and we divide it up by grades. So we have nursery, pre-K, kinder, first, second, you know, all the way up through high school. No matter what stage you're in, you can come and your kid will be in a class. Well, some people are like, and I've found a lot of co-ops that are just like for young children, and they say, okay, that's okay, we're just gonna do young, and the high schoolers can just like come and hang out and do their own work or stay at home or whatever. So you've gotta find like some people, you've gotta figure out what you wanna do. If high school's too much, if you just wanna do like little people, figure out what's gonna work with you and your group of what ages. The next thing is religious affiliation. So I know this is like an LDS homeschool conference, and there's lots of, this is our LDS co-op. The co-op that I'm part of is not an LDS co-op, and it has been fabulous. I think it's been great for my family. That doesn't mean you might not find want to make an LDS co-op with just a couple of your friends and it's perfect. But this has been a great thing for my family for a few reasons. One, I kind of feel like my kids are already sheltered. They're home with me all day. I'm teaching them my value system. And someday they're going to go off into the world. And amazingly, everyone's not LDS. So maybe it would be good if they've had interactions besides just going to like mutual and primary and all that kind of stuff, and realize that there's really good people everywhere. The other thing that has just been, this has been like a really great opportunity to share the gospel, which we have done a bazillion times, and not in the awkward, let me give you my a Book of Mormon and share my testimony, like in a gospel discussion, like almost every single week. When my one who's 10, when he was in kindergarten at co-op, the teacher was doing a like a geography, like mini history lesson, and she'd looked up people coming to America. She's not LDS, people coming to America. And she'd printed off a picture to bring in, and it's that picture in the Book of Mormon with like Nephi on the ship. Like, she didn't know. She just ran like a Google search. And she's like, so how did some people get to America? And she holds up this picture. And my son's like, that's Nephi. And there was another LDS girl, and they're like, why do you have a picture of Nephi? And she's like, who is Nephi? What am I doing here? So she came up to me and she's like, I think we need to have a Book of Mormon discussion. And I'm like, okay. Who's Nephi? What is this picture I just showed? Like, she had no idea. And so I sat and gave her like, you know, like a 5-10 minute, like, this is the Book of Mormon and this is how Nephi played in. And she is super receptive. And like, this is a person who goes to a church that normally is very like anti-Mormon. And she was like, oh, I never knew that. And it wasn't like she came and got baptized the next day as much as she was like, oh, so you guys do believe a Bible. So you blah, 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 blah. And it became like this great thing. And I have that happen all the time, all the time. And I mean like little things all the time. Like, it's just been so good because you want to teach your kids like to share the gospel. And this is their peer group, you know? These are the people they're around. These are the people who they get to be examples to. My daughter, oh, she's in the corner in pajama day. She looks scary in that picture. When she was in their third and fourth lit class, she was the only LDS girl there. There's like 17 kids. And they were doing Trumpet of the Swan, if you've read that. And the teacher was like, do you think it's ever okay to steal? Because if you've read Trumpet of the Swan, his dad like breaks through the window and grabs like the trumpet, you know? And so she brought the question up, do you think it's ever okay to steal? And these are good kids from Christian families. And they were like, oh yeah, it's okay if you need to. Like, this was okay. This was an okay time to steal. And my daughter was like, it's never okay to steal. Have you read the Ten Commandments? And she's kind of my shy one. And she was like, that's not okay. You just can't steal. Well, I didn't think anything. I wouldn't have even known. I wasn't even in the class. I was teaching something else. Except I had like three different moms come up to me and say, your daughter was the only one, and they're not LDS. Your daughter like knows that you don't steal. Like, she was like, I've taught my kids the Ten Commandments and they didn't know that. And I had one friend who was like, who's not LDS, she's like, what are you teaching your kids? Like, why are they good kids? Like, what are you doing? I'm like, do you want to come to church with me? She was like, yes, but then she didn't, because you know that happens all the time. But this has been so good, and it's been so good in the community. Because I joke that, and it's not even a joke, it's totally true, that I spend more time in other churches than in LDS church, because I go to co-op once a week, and then I've taught at a different like charter kind of homeschool thing, a Lego robotics class. And so I'm there, and I brought my kids there, and then we volunteer with refugees in the Jewish synagogue in Boise. So I'm like I have like only like, you know, maybe 4.5 hours at the other churches and like 20 hours everywhere else. And it has opened doors. Like, you get into the community and people are like, oh, you're LDS and you're okay. And you're, you know, and I find like that's a good thing. So that's like my little like soapbox that I kind of went on. But I just think maybe don't be so limiting. You may be surprised about some awesome friendships you can develop. Okay, going on. So depending on like, some people are like, okay, we want to do history in our co-op, and we want everyone to buy Story of the World. So in a way, that's limiting if you've come up with, this is the curriculum, and we're going to do this, and you need to purchase it or whatever. Sometimes that's limiting in that way. Sometimes people say, we have like a Charlotte Mason or, you know, this philosophy, and we want to do it this way. So it limits people by, we're gonna do this way. Sometimes it's like, just come do whatever, but no, we're using this textbook or this thing. So sometimes you limit by philosophy, you limit by the curriculum, those kind of things. So those are some things, because what's gonna happen is maybe not the first year as it's getting going, but in years you will become, like, I have waiting lists in my co-op because we cap it at 12 kids a grade. and I have waiting lists every single year. And so people are going to come in with all sorts of everything, homeschool philosophies, religious backgrounds, unschoolers, you know, and you have to say, this is what we do. So if you can mesh with this goal, cool, you know. And sometimes it's not anything like that, it's everybody, but it's just a, this is what we do to keep discipline, order, and structure. So if your child can handle sitting in a chair in a classroom, then you're gonna be fine. Our co-op is very open, just we're gonna use these textbooks, so you're gonna need to purchase it. But we've had to set some guidelines on behavior. So we've had many kids on the like autism spectrum, that's fine. But if you're, we had one kid who would take the push pins and walk around and like push into other kids. And his mom was like, he's got a sensory disorder, it's fine. And I'm like, it's actually not fine to be pushing other kids with push pins. Like that's disrupting them. So I understand that he has like maybe some learning difficulties, but if he can't sit in a chair throughout the class and doesn't disrupt, that's not going to work. So you have to set a guideline at the beginning so you don't come across as like some mean dictator partway through where you're like, your kid's horrible, we don't want him. It's not that you don't want him, but they just might not be ready yet to sit their bottom in a chair and listen for a while. And you know, that's why people homeschool, is because they have kids who have problems, and I get that. And it might be, hey, why don't you try it? And you sit with your kid and see if this works. But at the same time, I have 11 other kids in the classroom, so you've got to find a balance. So some point you have to kind of, as your group of forming your co-op, sit down and be like, what is our guideline? Is it okay with everything? Do we care if kids wander here and there? Do they need to sit in a chair? You have to come up with, this is who can come in, or anyone can come in, but these are our rules. This is the structure. And that's just like in a home. I mean, people want structure, they want rules. It helps, you know? So it's like a know yourself kind of thing. Okay, so here's costs to consider. So if you're doing stuff completely like at someone's house and everybody just brings their own supplies, maybe you don't have a ton of costs, but if you're renting a space, you're gonna have to pay for rent. I don't know any church that will just let you in for free. So you have to figure out rent. Usually what works for me, instead of just asking, because if you ask, you can get like these ridiculously crazy high numbers, is just say, I've got $350 a month I could pay for rent, or whatever it is. This is our budget, and then let's start with our budget instead of, well, what will you charge me? That usually works better. So figure out your budget first and go with that. So depending on the church, we have insurance, and quite honestly, I've never dealt with the insurance. That's my treasurer's job. But that's mostly, some churches will require it so that if like a kid breaks their wrist at the church isn't getting, they can go at the co-op's insurance, not the church's insurance. Does that make sense? And so I've never, my treasurer does it all. Ours, we used to have a more expensive policy that was like $800 a year, and she's got one that's like $400 a year now. So it depends on where you are, what, you can talk to me and I can text her and find that out. The information, I honestly don't deal with it because I got other things to do. But you may need, like, if the church has never done it before, they might not say anything or know anything, but lots of them like to be like, if you come in and say, we're insured, so they'll be like, oh, okay, that's a good thing. So that's an expense we always pay. So supplies, it depends on how you want to do supplies. So in ours, each kid brings a backpack each week, and it has their normal things. It has pencils, scissors, glue stick, markers, crayons, you know, what those like basic things. Some people like have just like a bin, they put in money or they put in supplies at the end and they share. We have like, what we do is we have a back to co-op parents night, and where people are assigned to bring like dry erase markers or baby wipes or paper towels or a few things that everybody will need. And we just have a giant bin and we shove that in, and then it's there on Thursday and people can grab dry erase markers and paper towels and baby wipes and some of those kind of things. So you could think, if you're at people's houses, it might be toilet paper, it might be, you know, whatever. What are some of the supplies we want everyone to pitch in, and what are some supplies we want families to provide themselves? Or do we just want to say, hey, let's just have a big tub and everybody's scissors are in the middle? Or you kind of have to figure out if that's a cost that you're going to either collect supplies from the families or collect money to buy supplies, or if it's like a on your own kind of thing. I lost my train of thought. I have no idea where I was going with that.
In the co-ops that we did at in Pennsylvania, uh-huh. both of them also had the teacher. So if the teacher was teaching a science class and needed some extra little things, there was a cost for the class, and included in that was that little bit of supply
right.
that the teacher had decided, I need this for my class, rather than, you know, her buying it for everybody, that each family helped purchase the things that they needed
right.
for that specific class.
And so there's several ways. I'm glad you brought that up, because that was actually my thought. I forgot. There's a few ways to do it. So with our high school class, we had the teacher had a supply fee because they were dissecting, they were using slides and a microscope. There were some extra costs that would be very expensive for her compared to like maybe a pre-K teacher or something. So there was a supply fee for high school. What we've done for other things is like if there was an art teacher with 12 kids and they needed air dry clay for their art project, that would kind of be expensive for her to buy enough air dry clay for 12 kids. So she would just send out an email that says, everybody bring a tub of air dry clay. So we communicate with email a lot. So the teacher would email the parents and say, this week we're doing sculpture, you need to bring air dry clay. Or this week we're bringing painting, I'll supply, you know, the paints if she had the paints, you bring a paintbrush. And so there was a little give and take. If it was an expensive thing, that got passed on to the parents within reason, because, you know, we're all mostly like one income families because we're homeschooling. And if it was just little, like I always felt like, okay, I'm teaching a sixth grade science class, so I'm bringing in a few things that maybe cost me a little bit, but somebody's teaching my fourth grader science, and someone's teaching my high schooler science, and somebody's teaching this kid art, and this kid. So everybody's bringing in a little, and it all kind of evened out. But that was like my supplies being maybe less than like $5 a week, you know? So if it was expensive, we always were like, bring in this. Or even if it was like unique, like sometimes we do a science project and I needed everybody to bring a 2-liter bottle of soda because I was not going to drink 12 2-liter bottles of soda in a week. We don't, you know, like, so then we just emailed the group and say, bring in your own empty 2-liter bottle of soda for this, you know, thing. So we also we communicate a lot through email. And so sometimes people will be saying, I'm doing this art project and I just need one balloon and I don't want to run to the store for one balloon for this thing. And so does anybody have it? And then it's just kind of this communal closet pantry type thing. Yeah, I'll bring you a balloon. And the next week I might ask for paper plates. And so that's kind of how we've done supplies. But you have to factor that in. Like, how are you going to handle it when you're setting it up? Okay, if you're going to do parties, this is like the little kids, their favorite thing ever, because those are the things they miss in public school. So we do Halloween party, Christmas party, Valentine's party, field day. Sometimes we've done back to co-op parties, you know, whatever. So is that just going to be, are we going to collect money and then like redistribute it out? Or is it just going to be a, hey, you bring the cupcakes, you bring whatever. If you want to collect money, put that into what you're planning. If you want to do something, so you have a good idea like of your budget cost. And then if you're doing like a field trip, you can do a field trip as part of your co-op. Or if you're doing like a field trip co-op, how are we going to do this? Is one person going to collect from everybody? Or if we're going to do a field trip at the beginning of the year, are we going to say, this is how much the cost is, give it to me up front so I'm not walking around trying to pick up $2 from every family each week? So those are some things you can consider so that you have a really good idea going into it, because we all have to budget, no matter your No matter your budget, you have to budget, right? So if you're trying to recruit people to your co-op, one of the first things they're going to say is, how much is this going to cost me? And so if you think, oh, I think it's only going to cost like $20 a month, and it ends up costing like $50 a month, that's different for people who are budgeting. And like I said, we're homeschooling, so this is often just a single, you know, parent income. Lots of people are on a tight budget. So you really need to just really sit down and evaluate. This is my cost. So I can give you an accurate, and maybe I said 20, but it's 25, so that's not too off when I really sat down. But I want it as accurate as possible, because that's hard for people to really commit to and budget, and then you've just changed that number on them. So that's why you really need to think on that. So then you have to think about your size, because lots of times once it starts, everybody wants to get in, and you need to think, how many people can we accommodate in, one, and two, how many people do we need for what we're going to do? So you may want to keep your cost down to a certain number. So that's why you figure out, like in that other sheet, this is how much it's going to cost us. I want to keep it, if it costs me $1,000, I want to keep it to $100 a family. I need a bare minimum 10, because if I only have 5, that's obviously double the cost, right? So if you're trying to think on cost, you have to figure out how many families you need. The other thing you need to think about is your number of teachers. So if you have just one class you're teaching, and you just, instead of doing grades, you're like little, big, middle people, I just need 3 teachers, so I just need a minimum of 3. But if you're like, well, we want to do co-teachers, so the teacher doesn't have to teach every week, now you've just jumped to, I need a minimum of 6 teachers. And so you have to kind of evaluate that. If you want a lot of classes, and you want everybody to teach a class, and you don't want anybody to teach more than one class, which is really a wise idea, because that prevents the burnout, you know, co-teachers are only one class, you're going to have to think, okay, if I need 18 teachers, but we're only going to meet in somebody's house, is this realistic? So I either need to think about changing my location, or I need to think about my classes, or maybe I don't do co-teachers, or maybe I don't do as many class periods, or however you want to do that. So you've got down to, okay, this is reasonable size teachers, this is reasonable cost. And then think about, the last thing you can think about is your space. So if it's in somebody's home, and they're trying to get around a table, well, how many tables does this person have? Are we going to bring tables? Where can we actually put them? How many chairs? Are we going to sit on the ground? If we're in a church, how many tables does the church have? How many chairs do they have? Like, those are just like, you realistically have to think, how many people can I put in here? So the big, like, as it feels a little overwhelming, planning is actually really important, because then it's not overwhelming later on. If you take like your summer or a week or two and just like knock it out, then at the end you're like, oh, I know we have enough space. Instead of showing up, when we changed locations the first year, we showed up and we ran out of chairs. I hadn't counted the chairs. I just assumed, because we had enough classrooms, there was enough chairs. And it was our first day, and I was like panicking, and we pulled it out of their sanctuary, and it was just crazy. And I thought, oh, people are going to have to, I hadn't counted it. So like, those are the kind of things where you just over plan, and then you can just sit back and you're not panicky, because it's all like worked out. Okay, so we've kind of talked about some of the things, and then you have to think about who's going to run it. So if you're here, you kind of might want to start a co-op, but if you do it all by yourself, that's going to just burn you out. Just like in the church, you don't just have like the Relief Society president, she has her counselors to help her. So if you start really small with like 3 families, you're all probably just pitched in together and figured this out. As you get bigger, or if you start big, okay, if you start big, you may divide it up. So I think the bare minimum is you need a director. You need somebody to be in charge, just because somebody has to make decisions sometimes on the fly. You can't always just sit and say, what are we going to do? Let's have a meeting about we ran out of chairs. You just have to scramble, right? So you need somebody to be a director, and I think you need a separate person to be a treasurer. I don't want to touch the money. That's like a job. Collecting it, distributing it, however you want to go about that. Some ones that are big enough, they have like 501c's and they have different fundraising things. I don't want to do that. I don't want to deal with that. Somebody else does is our treasurer, who's like fabulous with money. I'm the director. I think that's like a bare minimum to just not have to have one person do it all. Some other things you might want to have is somebody who's like a communications director or a secretary. If you have a Facebook group, if you communicate through email, through text, something, they give everybody's contact info and they can send out the stuff. If they, like we had last year where we had this horrible, horrible snowstorm and everyone's like, are we going to have co-op? Is it canceled? The public school kids, you know, canceled. Like, what are we going to do? So we need somebody to quickly, we have 43 families, like I was not going to individually text, you know, so find a way that you can communicate, have somebody who can, like, I'll post that to Facebook, I'll send out an email, we've got a, you know, whatever. So that's a nice thing to have. If you decide that you're going to have like a central like supply thing, put somebody in charge of supplies so it's not you. If you're running, you don't need to, somebody can check and say, oh, all of our whiteboard markers are dried out. We need to get more, or we ran out of paper towels last week. Let me go buy them and I'll turn my receipt into the treasurer. And like, what? That's another thing that's really nice, depending on obviously your size. Then if you do a lot of parties, you can have a party planner. This coming year, what we've decided is we're going to have a high school student council because homeschool kids don't get the opportunity to run for student government. And so we're going to have a student government and then they're going to plan it. And I'm so excited to just let them do it. But I wish I would have thought of this years ago, actually. But if you don't have high schoolers and you have little ones, somebody wants to, you know, plan the games and the crafts or whatever. We've had people do that before. Depending on where you're at, you may need somebody in charge of cleanup and setup. Like, we have to set the tables and chairs up, and then we have to clean it up and vacuum and stuff at our church. But if you're at someone's house, like, seriously, don't just leave it a disaster. Somebody might need to say, even just assigning out, you're in charge of vacuuming, you're in charge of cleaning the bathroom, you're in charge of whatever. We actually have it all assigned out. Like, this person vacuums, this person cleans the bathroom, this person puts these tables and chairs up. But if you have someone who does that and assigns it out and makes sure they do the walkthrough, okay, it all got cleaned, that's kind of nice. Again, this depends on your size. Yeah.
So we did it. There were two different co-ops we did this past year, and they both handled this differently. On the one, at the very beginning of the year, each family was assigned a zone or their particular specific job. Mm-hmm. On the other co-op, which was much larger, what they did is they charged a $35 fee. Cleaning fee. And then what they did is that they had volunteer slots. And if you had signed up for 6 volunteer slots, like the cleanup or the, they had, this was a drop-off co-op, so they had checkout, check-in kind of thing, then you would get your $35 returned. And so it was either you pay for somebody to help or you, you know.
That's a great way to do it.
And they did it by sign-up genius, you know, for the volunteers of who would sign up. And when there was a hole, they would send out something to say, hey, we've got a hole. And the other thing they did is if you did more than your 6 volunteer slots, then you actually got priority in registration for the next year's classes.
Gotcha.
And so it helped people who needed that.
Right.
You know, because there was one class that they had a hole in their curriculum that they wanted to get in.
Right.
They would volunteer more often. And so they got that privilege to do
That's a great way to do it. So those are just things you have to think about so it doesn't get dumped on somebody. I find like as you're really, sometimes it feels like overthinking, but it's not. It's just really good planning, because if you don't, what happens is, like just in church, you know, like the same 10 people who do everything, people start picking it up and then they burn out and then the co-op dissolves. I mean, if you've seen that where it's just like awesome and then it dissolves, it really needs to be thought out, and that's a great way of thinking it out. Yeah.
Sure. Supplies, but what do you do? Like, my experience last year with our co-op is we had 3 people drop out.
Oh yeah,
and we
totally
just
happened.
Had enough families to like have, you know, 2 per class or whatever. But so do you like plan for that when you think how many families you need?
That's a really great question. And I do plan for that because I've done this for a bazillion years and people drop out all the time. And even the people you don't think are going to drop out because they're so committed, their husband moves across the country or something. So what I do is I plan in extra. So we usually, the people teach a class, but I plan for several co-teachers. And what I tell them is, right now you got to be a co-teacher, but if someone drops out, I'm going to have to rearrange and you're going to have to teach on your own. So I always pad my schedule, because what happened in some years past is when I didn't pad my schedule, then suddenly, and it was usually me, was teaching, okay, let me teach sixth grade science and first grade art and we're going to make this all work. So I think that's a great question. So if you're like, I need 10 families, what I think is, okay, I need 15 families or however you need, and then that just pads it for the year. So like I've started out this coming year right now at 43, and I won't end with 43. People will quit. But people know, like sometimes you're gonna get the whole year and you co-taught and you didn't, and that was great. You just had less on your plate. But this is what I've done so that it fills in the gap, because that is a big deal.
So what if you're at a house and you don't have room?
That's a good. So I've had that happen too. Well, when we started, when I took over this co-op, we were a lot smaller. We were like in the 20 families instead of like the 40. And I just advertised for new people in the middle of the year. I just said, okay, we need somebody. This is too much for anybody to take on. And so I just put it out there. And depending on your area, I don't know, but usually there's Facebook groups. And we have like a giant email thing in the Treasure Valley. And so I just send it out through those things. We need families. This is what we're looking for. And usually you don't have a hard time filling, because even though you have people who drop out, you have those people who moved mid-year and are looking for a co-op. And then most co-ops won't let you in mid-year or something, or their kids are just wanting to go back to public school and they just need a co-op so they can have friends or something. So usually that's how we filled it in the past. So if you think, you know what, I can only pad it by like one family or something, and then you drop out, then I just bring people in mid-year. Yeah.
How do you recruit families?
Because that's a good question.
Situation, my experience has been that we occasionally get families that are just a horrific fit.
Yes.
And in a really small situation, it's not very polite to be like, you know what, this
is. It's true, and it's awkward, and that is a good point. So we've done a couple things. One thing is, like I said, when we really have established a rule system, I make parents and kids sign a contract at the beginning of the year. This is what I expect from you. If you violate this, we may have to ask you to leave. And then I try to talk to him before. I'm just like, well, see ya, your kid was awful today. I'm like, look, you signed this contract, you're not following through. This is gonna, if you can't pull it together, we're gonna ask you to leave. So then it's not just me being a mean person, totally awkward, and I've had to do it, and it's awful. Like, it really is. There's no way around it. Like, it is awful. But the other thing we've done is I do an open house day in the spring for the upcoming fall. And that's when I send it out to anybody can come to the open house. But then, and this is just me being really awful, I have a selective waiting list for some people who never bounce off of it. But I can right away see those kids are going to be out of control. And I just don't need that. I have some people who are like, this, I feel questionable, but we're going to give it a try with you, whatever. But I've had people who are like, oh, I really want to come in. And I've just been like, I'm just going to be, because I'm a very honest, like straightforward person. I'll be like, I'm going to be brutally honest with you. I saw your kids at the open house. They had a hard time sitting in a chair. If you're going to do this, you need to know that this is like a probationary type thing. You may have to leave. And so I come into it kind of knowing, because sometimes if you're like, anybody who wants to, let's just start it. And then within 5 minutes, you're like, oh, heavens no, this is not going to work, you know? And so the open house gives me a really good way to be like, oh, I've seen how your kids interact. I've seen how you are. Okay, we'll see. If you really want to, I'm going to put this out there for you, and you're going to have to understand. Yeah.
So I've got, depending on the nature of the co-op or the philosophy, I've got sort of one of those kids. cannot sit in a chair.
Right.
He lounges, and he will pop up and give you the answer, and he will lounge again.
Right.
It's just part of his Asperger's thing that kicks in.
Right.
So I like the idea of saying, as a family, we're going to see if this fits for us. And if
right.
the co-op also says, let's see if this is a good fit, then it's not, I'm sorry, but this probationer, you need to get out.
Right.
So if it's established at first, what
right.
we're doing is seeing if this is a good fit.
And I've seen a lot of, like, when they put, we're looking for people to join a co-op, a lot of times there's that you have to come to the park day where you have to.
Right. Right.
Well, and I think it's my responsibility too, as I'm going into something, to say, by the way, this
yes.
kid has got dysgraphia. He doesn't write well. He can orally. Does this fit for you guys in the way that you do this? And
okay.
so I appreciated somebody actually asked that as I went to the open house. If anybody's got some kind of special challenges with their kids, can you please let us know so that we can find out if this is a fit?
And totally.
If not, there may be some other options. So it's all the community thing.
Yes.
And it's very inclusive cooperative instead of exclusive regimented. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And that was very, very, very helpful to me because I'm a mother bear. And the reason why I homeschool is because public school nearly killed him.
Right. And so you
and
have
so
to
I
find.
I can't have that experience in another, but he needs the social.
Right.
He's an extrovert and he craves it and he's the last kid at home and it's
so you need to so you have to find what works.
What
and that's why maybe you're starting a co-op that works for you because you may be like sitting in a chair all day and doing some other academic stuff maybe isn't going to work. But could we do something like a robotic hands-on something and then you can find what works for you.
What was funny is that he took a Civil War class. It was Civil War literature and history,
uh-huh.
right? And the gal who taught was a little bit of a rebellious spirit herself. It was so funny. She has made a calendar of every picture she took of him lounging at field trips, like he's laying on the ground,
mm-hmm.
and she's listening, and then this chair. She loved him. Do you
right.
mean she was able to go past that
right.
and see him? That made it a good fit.
Right.
There was a physics teacher that wasn't a good fit for him.
Right.
And we recognized that really quickly. And so I just said, you know what? Let's try physics in another form.
Right.
Let's do it a different way.
And I have actually found that kids with learning disabilities, it's not generally the problem. The problem is if the parents can't parent. I found that across the board because if the parents can parent, it doesn't matter. They figured out ways to adapt and they've taught their kid, like, you know, this is going to be hard for you. This is how we're going to try to work through it. But the problems I usually have are not kids on the spectrum. I had this kid whose mom came up to me and she's like, he's on the spectrum. I don't know how. He was fabulous. He was fabulous. There was no problem with him. The problem I have is the mom where I'm like, your kid's not listening. When I say something, they need to respect me and respond appropriately. And she's like, well, we don't really make them at home. And I'm like, and that's the problem right there. Like, and so usually I don't really think it's this any just, oh, we've had all kinds. It's really comes down to if the parent can't parent, then we're gonna have a problem right there. Like that usually it is the problem that I have. Right.
That's where they belong. But if you homeschool, you care about parenting.
Right.
And then you want to be around other parents who are parenting.
Right.
And I think that that's where
well, you know what I have found? So I call my co-op is a little bit type. I am like type A++. Okay. Throw that out there. What I have found is that it attracts a certain person because it's just like, you know, when you don't feel comfortable, you're not there. We tend to have really good parents over the years because when some people see, they feel uncomfortable. I don't feel like we're making them feel uncomfortable. That sounds bad. But I just feel like they step it up or they step out on their own. Yeah, and I would say being an LDS, the thing that has really helped has been prayer. As a director, I'm just like, please, Lord, bring me the people that our co-op needs. And when I have a problem, I'm like, sometimes I'm like, I'm just going to pray that person out. Like, I can't deal with you. I don't know what else to do. I need you to either figure out a way to resolve it yourself, or I'm just going to ask the Lord to just deal with you because I can't. And it has just really honestly praying for the right families, not the LDS families, just the right families has what has made this my family.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.